On cornerofthegalaxy.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Corner of the Galaxy from the Box on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Your host, Josh Gessman, here with a brand new co-host, LA Times soccer writer Mr. Kevin Baxter, also in the house, and we got a bunch of stuff to get to. Maybe a little bit of a quicker show if we can pull that off. As Kevin is traveling on the road, Kevin, I don't even remember where you said you were. I didn't even ask.
I am in Tampa.
Lovely Tampa. Covering the LA Kings, one of your favorite things to do, cover hockey, right?
Well, yeah, and if there's any place where hockey is big, you got to know it's Florida. They just can't get enough of hockey down here.
That's what I've heard. But anyway, I promise no hockey talk besides that on the rest of the podcast, but we have a bunch we want to get to. Obviously, the LA Galaxy are going to come up and play their first preseason game of the 2017 season, hosting the Xolos of Tijuana, Club Tijuana, coming into StubHub Center, and that game is on Tuesday night, so probably as you're listening to this tonight, if you're listening on Tuesday. We want to go over that, and we're going to do that here in just a little bit about maybe what we need to see from the LA Galaxy, and we'll also talk about who we think is going to be available, who is not going to be available, and any other little tidbits we can sort of take from a meaningless preseason game, and we'll get to that. But first, I have to get to my wonderful co-host here. Got some people fired up over the weekend after the U.S. men's national team's 1-0 win over Jamaica in the end of their sort of January camp. Bruce Arena obviously back in the helm, and we don't want to talk about, you know, U.S. men's national team, because I certainly don't assume that everybody who listens to this show is a U.S. men's national team fan. But Kevin did write an article talking about the MLS player pool and possibly being shallow. Kevin, I feel like maybe you got a little blowback on that.
Yeah, I got a lot of blowback, and I don't think people that blew back read the article. As one person who wrote in to me on Twitter said that most of the people critical of it were stooping to personal attacks on me and not attacking the article. Basically, my idea was, after Bruce Arena's first game against Serbia, which was a scoreless draw against a team of second string Serbian players, and no one on that Serbian team, by the way, had more than one international cap. Mm-hmm. So the entire team, even after the game, even after 11 players got caps, after the game, Jozy Altidore by himself had four times as many international caps as the entire Serbian team. My thought was that the U.S. should have won that game easily, and I thought they outplayed Serbia, but they got one shot on goal. And after that game, I let Bruce Arena talk about how he thought there had been some progress made and players get to play with each other and all that good stuff. And I let him have that. But then when the U.S. came back and beat a Jamaican team that had been together for 3 days and barely beat them 1-0 on a Jordan Morris goal, I thought, you know, there seems to be something wrong. This American team should be a lot better than this. This is, yes, it's the January camp. Yes, it's the all MLS camp. But, you know, we're 21 years into MLS.
Right.
And when MLS was founded after the 1994 World Cup, the idea was it would become a pipeline to produce players for the U.S. national team. And looking at those two results, looking at the players that we had on the field, looking at the fact that everyone says, well, this isn't our national team. Our national team will come together in March when we get all these players from Europe. I thought, you know what? I'm not convinced that MLS is doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is producing players for the national team. And a lot of the blowback that I got to that critique was that, well, you know, again, this is the January camp. These guys haven't been together, haven't been training for 6 weeks. because the MLS season's over. Well, you know what? The Serbian season was over in mid-December too. So these players from Serbia hadn't been playing either. So they were coming off vacation. They were saying, well, the U.S. players don't know each other. You know, and that part is kind of bunk, because when you look at the U.S. players on that team, you have DeMarcus Beasley with 124 caps, Michael Bradley with 128, Jozy Altidore with 100. These guys have played together. Bedoy of 57, right. Benny Fellharbor 43. These guys have all played with each other. Again, maybe not last week, but they've been together and they were in camp for 3 weeks. I just thought that they should have got more than one shot against a Serbian team of teenagers, and I thought that they should have done better against Jamaica. And so I feel like, you know, maybe the team isn't coming together the way it's supposed to. And then when you look at the MLS thing, and maybe this is the biggest part of the criticism, the Gold Cup is the MLS tournament because of the time of year that it falls in. It's primarily all MLS players. There's not generally a FIFA break then. The U.S. has only won one of the last three Gold Cups. The U.S. national team has not been a majority MLS team since 1998. In other words, the majority of the players have come from overseas, from other leagues. And again, that speaks to, is the MLS producing the players that the national team needs? When the team does come together in March, the majority of the defenders, I think three of the four starting defenders, are likely to be from Europe. The playmaker, Christian Pulisic, will be coming from Europe. Bobby Wood, one of the target strikers, will be coming from Europe.
Right.
So, and that's all fine, and that's great. They're American players, and I'm not knocking that. My criticism wasn't of the U.S. national team, which I think is fine. My criticism was, how come MLS is not producing the players that it was supposed to produce when it was founded 21 years ago.
But do you think, okay, so now we're 21 years in the future, all right? Do you think that the LA Galaxy and MLS as an extension are worried about producing national team players anymore? Do you think Kurt Arnolfo, Chris Klein, and those guys say, you know, the goal of the LA Galaxy is to produce national team players?
No, I don't, and I'm not sure that they necessarily should.
Right.
I mean, I think that should be part of the mission. I think that their goal number one is to win. And you look at the Galaxy, you know, they signed two European midfielders this year rather than develop their own midfielders.
Right.
On the back line, Yella Van Dam and Ashley Cole, there's two European players there. Probably their top offensive weapon this year will be Giovanni Dos Santos. He plays for the Mexican national team. So, yeah, clearly the Galaxy are not trying to produce U.S. national team players, although they're not trying not to do it either. I mean, you know, they're signing the best players available. But MLS's mission, the reason we have a domestic league, I think part of it, and that was, again, going back to when the league was established, it was supposed to produce players for the U.S. national team. You know, last year the league had more American-born players than at any time in its history, yet slightly more than half the players in the league were foreign-born, not eligible to play for our national team. So, you look at that and you say, well, you know, what does that say? Does that say that they're giving opportunity to American players? Certainly, the highest number ever. But, some of the stars and some of the best-paid players, you know, come from overseas.
Yeah, and is that also, I mean, as you look at it, Kevin, and you sort of try to figure out, again, you know, I look at the LA Galaxy and I say, hey, they're going to develop those homegrown talents sort of the way that they want to. And granted, this year, I think you're going to see a lot more of those homegrown players, and you're going to see the LA Galaxy relying on these young kids. I mean, is it a criticism almost of the academies, that the academies haven't produced where they should? And when you look at that, you have to realize that realistically, the big investment in academies for MLS has happened, what, in the last probably 5 or 6 years? I mean, it hasn't been a consistent, concerted effort on MLS's part to, I think, develop some of these younger American players. And I don't think that the clubs are even anywhere near focused on that anymore. They're looking for the best players, and that's the way it's going to be. So, I mean, is MLS almost in a lose-lose situation here? Because realistically, their job is never going to be, and I don't think they can be, if they want to be a top league in the world, to singularly focus on developing, you know, young American players for the national team.
Well, there's a couple of examples and a couple of stories about that. First of all, the English Premier League is one of the most foreign dominant leagues in the world. It's also the best league in the world, I think, the deepest, the most talented players. But, you know, many of the star players in that league are not English. They're foreigners. Yet 22 of the 23 players on the English national team in their last World Cup qualifier play in the Premier League. The one that doesn't play in the Premier League now is Joe Hart, who played in the Premier League for many years and moved to Italy. So in England, and you can say anything you want about the English national team. A lot of people are very critical and don't think it's a great team, but it was ranked or is ranked in the top 10 in the world. The U.S. is 32nd, I believe, or in the last FIFA ranking. So they're not a terrible team. Yes, they're not France or Italy or Brazil, but they're not a terrible team. And the majority of their players, 22 of the 23, come off English Premier League teams. So in England, they've managed to have a great league, a foreign league, and also produce world-class players. Now, what I would say about MLS, and this was in the story, that MLS and the U.S. national team might have been a little bit late to the party, but they are spending tens of millions of dollars now on youth development. Academies, the U.S. national team now goes down to U12 in their academy system. One of the last things Jurgen Klinsmann did on his way out the door was to set up a new way of credentialing coaches so that that the coaches in some of these youth programs are no longer someone's dad who once played American football and knows a little bit about sports. Now they're certified soccer coaches, and that's going to make a big difference. You know, last year Arsenal's chief soccer executive was at the MLS All-Star game and talked at length about how MLS, the next movement is producing young American players. You know, kids are coming to soccer in greater numbers than ever before, more than they're playing American football at a young age. We need to harvest and harness that talent and that desire to play this game and teach the players to play it the right way. And I think that's starting to happen now. The intent of the article wasn't to say that U.S. soccer will never be great. It's just to say that it's failed its mission so far, and it's beginning to spend money to correct that now. And I think perhaps going forward, it'll get better. And I guess the one thing that always struck out with, I don't mind the criticism of the story. I love it when people point out where they think that I'm wrong. It's the only way that I'm going to get better as a writer and sort of find out where the readers are. But the idea that it's okay to have a scoreless tie against Serbia and then to barely beat Jamaica with a team of players like Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore, talented players, there's no argument there, Sasha Clayston, those players should be mopping the floor with teams like that. And the fact that they're not, I think, says something about our program.
Yeah, I tend to dismiss the results in January, and I always have, because I've been to a bunch of camps, the Camp Cupcakes. I've been to a bunch of them. I've seen them. I have yet to see too many goals scored in any of these Camp Cupcake matches. So I tend to dismiss January results just on the face of it. And you're right that the team that's going to go to World Cup qualifying will be a much different team. You are going to get a bunch of those, very talented European-based players that come in lead that U.S. men's national team there. But, you look at players, and I don't know, maybe we're starting to see a little bit of a corner. You're starting to see some of the younger players. I'd even say like Sebastian Legette, a guy who, and as you pointed out in your article, went overseas, got completely and totally ignored, Kevin, didn't get the playing time. He had some problems. He had some sickness issues, some health issues whenever he was over there. And then he comes back into the U.S. Bruce Arena finds him, brings him to the LA Galaxy, and you've seen what he's been able to do. I mean, right now it looks as though Sebastian Legette is going to get called up for World Cup qualifiers. I don't think he starts, but I think he's on the bench, and I think he's a weapon that Bruce Arena will not be afraid to use. So you are getting some of those young players, even if Sebastian Legette is sort of a hybrid of the American developed player, even though he went over to West Ham and was developed over in the England side of things. But you're starting to see that, even maybe a Jordan Morris. But there's also an argument, and a pretty good one, in terms of that the best players in Major League Soccer wants to keep the best players in Major League Soccer. And they also want to be one of the top leagues in the world. And you can't keep your best players who are American players in the league and sort of be one of those top leagues in the world if you're not importing some of that talent. So, is there a balance there? Is there, you look at Landon Donovan, who stayed most of his life in Major League Soccer. It didn't hurt his development, but he seems to be the outlier so far.
Well, there's a lot there. First of all, about Camp Cupcake, I tend to agree. And Bruce said if we had won the game against Serbia, if we had won 5-0 and lost 5-0, it wouldn't change his evaluation of the match. And that's probably true. But you talk to the players, and I did talk to a couple of players before the game. They weren't necessarily buying the Camp Cupcake thing. They said every time we step on the field, we want to win. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they're not going to take a risk of breaking an ankle to score a goal against Serbia in January. But I do think that they want to win every time they step on the field. I do think there were people who were auditioning for jobs like Graham Zuzzi, a guy who has a lot of international caps. And this was a guy, 44 international caps. This was a guy playing for a spot on the World Cup qualifying team in a new position. And I don't think he played very well at all. You know, another thing is, you know, you could be a guy who hasn't, you know, maybe a former high school baseball player and you haven't played in a competitive game in 4 years and you go out to play in the company softball tournament. You try really hard to win. I don't think that any of the American players were saying, you know what, this score doesn't matter. I'm not going to run hard after that pass. I think they wanted to win, and I think they had the talent to win. And the fact that they didn't, you know, again, I'll just go back to, I think they wanted to win the game. And then afterwards, when they say, well, the score didn't matter, well, you know what, that's not what you're saying before the game. But you bring up some good points. You know, one of the things MLS said is, look, our salary cap is not holding people back. Yes, it is. And you know, you look at a guy like Jeff Cameron, he'll make at Stoke City, he'll make in 3 weeks what the medium wage for a MLS defender, what a medium wage MLS defender will make in the entire year.
Right.
He makes that in 3 weeks. So, yes, there is a financial reason to go overseas. And so an American player gets to be at a good point in his life and he goes overseas. Now, Jeff Cameron, you could argue, you know, as an American player that was developed in the American system, so many players on this national team, Pulisic, Bobby Wood, Fabian Johnson, John Brooks, Timmy Chandler, they did not grow up in the American system. So we really can't blame them or claim them, rather. But
right.
Going back to your example of Sebastian Legette, I think is a good example. And I think we need to see a lot more of this. This was a guy who went to West Ham at a very young age, grew up in San Jose area, San Francisco area, was highly touted, was going to be the next thing. He went over there, got lost in the system. It's very complicated in the system, and the youth development system over there is very deep. And came back, and you know what? He got developed by MLS. Credit to MLS for doing that. Credit to Sebastian Legette for coming back and seeing that, look, something had to change. I'm sure he would have preferred to stay in the Premier League. I'm sure he would have preferred to play in the Premier League.
Right.
But he came back here, was developed, and is becoming a very, very good national team player. And you know what? I would not be surprised if he starts that game against Honduras, the must-win game in March, because Jermaine Jones won't be able to play. He'll be
That's
suspended.
Right.
And I could definitely see Sebastian stepping out there and playing. And here's the big thing for Galaxy fans. You could see Sebastian this last month. His confidence level just went through the roof. He is a totally, totally different player than he was at the end of last season. And the Galaxy is clearly going to reap that. I look for Sebastian Legette to maybe be the best player in the Galaxy this season. And he certainly will be in parts of the season, maybe for the whole year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, if you're an LA Galaxy fan in terms of exactly what you're expecting from the national team absences, I think we've said it before, but, you know, you're looking at Jermaine Jones, you're looking at Sebastian Legette, you're looking at Giovanni Dos Santos, you're looking at Giassi Zardes, all being gone for the U.S. men's national team and or the Mexican national team at any given sort of point here. The LA Galaxy are already thin. I think we've already established that over the last couple of podcasts. If you're going to continue to look at these guys who are going to be gone, you're going to have to see guys who step up. And what is that going to look like for the LA Galaxy? And that's what we'll continue to see. And as we look towards this this Xolos game coming up on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. So let's move to that game now, Kevin. We'll let you off the hook if you want to get at Kevin Baxter, at KBaxter11 on Twitter. If you disagree or agree with him, we'd love to hear it. At Galaxy Podcast, I can pass it along to him as well. So please let us know. And as Kevin continues to write throughout the year for the LA Times, make sure that you go ahead and give us your opinions of what he has to say or what I have to say, whether it's on the show or in written articles, but either of us do. We want to discuss that with you. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, is to be in touch with the fans. So if you think we're full of it, we want to know that we're full of it. Of course, we'd really like to know if you think we're geniuses, but I don't think that's going to happen too often, Kevin, so I wouldn't get too excited about that. Let's go to the Xolos game. Again, 8 p.m. on Tuesday, February 7th at StubHub Center. It is the Xolos who are in first place after five games right now in 2017. They have four wins and one loss. They've scored 12 goals and just allowed six. Now, granted, Kevin, as we learned last year, you're not going to get the full Xolos team here right now. They're in the middle of their seasons. You're probably going to get some of those reserve guys, some of those bench guys, and a lot of guys wearing triple-digit numbers.
Oh, not so fast there.
Oh, really? You think yes. Everybody's coming?
This is, well,
Go ahead.
I can't say for sure. Okay. I can say that I spoke to the people at Tijuana late last week and again today, and asked them if they could, you know, please tell me who's coming. What do you expect? And the last response I got was, they're not sure who is traveling as of right now. This is what the communications department said.
Right.
But the spokesperson said, I'm guessing most of the starters will go. Now, frankly, that would surprise me. Even though the guy just told me that.
Right.
I would still be very surprised if most of the starters came down for what is essentially a meaningless game against what will probably be a lot of young players trying to prove themselves. Now, turning to the Galaxy, I spoke to Kurt Arnolfo at some length on Friday, and this is not Camp Cupcake, by the way.
Right.
This is camp two workouts a day, and these guys are exhausted. And Kurt Arnolfo talked about that, and he said, look, you're going to see a lot of tired legs. You're going to see a lot of tired players. We're essentially training through this game. It's like an Olympic swimmer or an Olympic distance runner. They will train hard right through a competition because they're trying to build strength and stamina for the future. So Kurt Arnolfo, he said, this is his quote, I'm not putting a lot of stock in this game. For me, it's just a game on the schedule in preseason. We have a little more than 4 weeks before our opener. It's just another step to get ready. He said, however, there's only a period of time left and they need to start doing some fine tuning. He would like to see some combinations. He would like to see how players work side by side with one another.
Right.
He said, this is their hardest week of the year and he expects the players to be heavy legged. I think you mentioned earlier, Jesse's artist probably not going to play, almost right. Certainly won't play because of the mild contusion he has on a knee. Romain Alessandrini and Joao Pedro both had to go back to Europe to take care of some immigration documents. The Trump ban will not stop them from returning, as far right. as we know. So they will be back at some point, but we don't know how long this process will take.
Yeah,
and in the case of Alessandrini, he didn't leave for Paris until Thursday or Friday.
Right.
Even if he got the immigration paperwork done at the airport, then he's got another 13-hour flight back. So I don't see why Kurt would want to play either one of those players after they got off a long international flight. So those two are probably out, as you said, Sebastian Legette. Kurt said if he played substantial minutes against Jamaica, he wouldn't play against Cholos. He played 90 minutes against Jamaica. So he's probably out. So what you're going to do, you'll probably see maybe a little bit of Ashley Cole, a little bit of Yella Von Dom, maybe a little bit of Jermaine Jones. I would expect Jermaine Jones to right. probably see a little bit of action. But other than that, it's going to be, Jack McBean. It's going to be Raul Mendiola. Kurt said he would empty his bench and he has unlimited substitutions. So you will see a lot of players, a lot of young players, and a lot of exciting players. You're probably going to see Ima Boateng and Ari Lassiter, and you're going to see Bradford Jameson. Those guys can all fly. The Galaxy may have the best 400-meter relay team in MLS, and it's right. going to be really exciting to watch those guys play.
Well, it should be fun. Have you heard anything about Giovanni Dos Santos, Kevin? Because I listened and I've read and I've put contacts in wherever I need to have, talk to people. And so far, it seems like there should be no reason why Giovanni Dos Santos doesn't play in this game.
Well, the Mexican national team's playing in Las Vegas, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, it might be. Yep.
Yeah, I saw a picture of Giovanni in Las Vegas. So I guess he's playing in that game. I don't know. I apologize. I don't know when that game is, but it would definitely seem if he's in Las Vegas yeah. that he's probably not going to be back in time to play for the Galaxy.
That probably won't happen. So, yeah, I mean, that definitely could be one of those things that keeps him from doing it. Yeah, I hadn't read that. I kept trying to find information. Didn't see it. So, no Pedro, no Alessandrini, limited minutes from Legette. Who are you going to see in the middle and how many minutes are you going to get out of Jermaine Jones? So, how soon does Raul Mendiola come in and where does Sebastian Legette play? And, somebody actually wrote into us, and it's Bobby from Huntington Beach. Bobby says, Josh and Kevin, can you do a preview and a prediction for starting lineups and finals for the preseason game versus the Cholos tomorrow? Like, say what you'd be looking for and who you think will start coming on as subs, blah, 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 the whole deal. He goes through his predictions as well. I'll give you, just who I think off the top of my head as starters, and I think you got the back line of Cole, Van Dam, Stares, and Rogers. I mean, everybody there seems healthy, and they will get some minutes, whether or not that's 45.
Excuse me, I neglected to say Robbie Rogers apparently held out of training the end of last week with an ankle issue, so he may be questionable there. And another point of information, Mexico's playing Iceland on Wednesday the 8th,
so no Gio. Okay, so, and Rogers too. See, this is why we do this podcast. Kevin and I don't get to talk all the time, so then we get to talk now and I get to figure out who's actually going to be available. You know what, Bobby? Here's the deal. Here's who's going to be available. Whoever has a kid on at this point. because there's a lot of guys. I think you're going to see Boateng. I think you're going to see a little bit of Jones. Baggio, who Sidic is going to definitely play a role in this. Whether or not you see legit toss up, who knows? Jack McBean, Ari Lassiter, sort of what Kevin says. You know, Bradford, Jamison the fourth, Mendiola. All those guys, there's going to be a ton of guys. You may even see Diop get some time, or you could even see Dan Kennedy get some time in goal. Maybe Brian Rowe doesn't play the whole 90 minutes. Maybe he only plays 45. It's a matter of how they rotate. The bigger issue here is, and as reported by LA Galaxy insider Adam Serrano, was talking about, you know, that Romain Alessandrini and Joao Pedro may not be back for the next, you know, 10 to 14 days. Realistically, whenever all this paperwork gets done and all gets finalized and everything happens and you do have to go back to your home country in order to establish the visa and then come in, get your passport stamped, and you know, everything's a happy camper once you're there, these guys are not training. Now, granted, they're also guys who are coming off basically mid-season for themselves, so I have to imagine they're in pretty good shape, but you're not developing any of that chemistry, Kevin, and realistically, the LA Galaxy are starting to, as you look at the calendar, and yes, it's about a month, a little less than a month before the LA Galaxy kick off against FC Dallas on March 4th. You look at this, there are a lot of missing pieces that are not with this team. And some of those pieces are going to come back. Some of those pieces are going to get put in, but there's no, you know, you're not going to get the pairing of Giassi Zardes and Giovanni Dos Santos to sort of get used to each other again after having not played together for a while. You're not going to have, you know, Alessandrini getting used to the midfield yet because he's probably not going to be in training for another week. You're not going to have Joao Pedro getting used to Jermaine Jones. All of these things are things that need to happen in order to be ready for the season. And for me, I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at how many players the LA Galaxy have on their roster, which I think is about 23 right now, and I sit there and say, you know, there is an extreme shortage of competent bodies, competent and healthy bodies for the LA Galaxy right now. Am I overreacting, Kevin?
Well, see, there you go, being pessimistic again.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you look at the possibility of Robbie Rogers not playing, and obviously we go to the bench there and we put AJ De La Garza. Oh, wait, we can't do that anymore, can we? AJ De La Garza. This will be the Galaxy's, Tuesday's game will be the first Galaxy game since 2008 in which AJ De La Garza is not on the roster. There's that. As far as the other things that go, though, here's what I look for. I look for Jack McBean to come out there and strut his stuff and to show that he deserves to be not necessarily the first guy off the bench, but maybe one of the guys that's considered in a rotation to play up front,
right,
with Gio and Zardes. So I look for him to come out and have a good game and, you know, tired legs or not, prove that he is what we've all thought he was when he first started playing for the Galaxy team as a teenager. So I look for big things for him. I look for Ari Lassiter and Bradford Jamison to come out and try to leave messages as well. These are guys that I think Jack McBean's pretty much a lock unless he stumbles poorly. I think he's pretty much a lock for the roster and for some serious minutes. Those two guys have, you know, their speed, especially blinding speed as a weapon. I think they need to show some things in this camp and in the preseason to lock up, their spots in the team. But when you talk about the other guys, okay, so we know that Joao Pedro is not going to be there. Alessandrini, Sebastian Legit probably not going to play. The midfield is the one thing that the Galaxy has spent all offseason making over, and now it looks like it's the place where they're going to lose a lot of players to, you know, national team duty, both in World Cup qualifiers, maybe in the Gold Cup. So what they need to do is establish some depth up front, too, because, you know, you're going to lose Sebastian and Jermaine Jones to the U.S. national team. And then up front, you're going to lose Gio to Mexico and Jesse's artist is going to be gone with the U.S. So those are four starting positions at least that you need to fill. And coincidentally, in this game, you're not going to have those four players, maybe Jermaine Jones a little bit. This is a chance for guys like Mendiola to step up and to say, hey, you know what? When those guys go, I'm your guy. Baggio Hasidic, we know what he can do. But, it would be a great opportunity for him to remind people of how good he is because there are open midfield spots. There are probably 10 starts at least in the midfield for people to claim and several up front too. Ari Lassiter, could claim one of those perhaps.
Right.
So, yes, you're right. It's not a good thing that these guys are not going to get some real game minutes to build those relationships. But if you're Kurt Anofo, I think you look at that and you say, there's nothing I can do about that. I can't hurry this immigration paperwork. It's going to take whatever it takes.
Right.
In the meantime, though, I can identify guys who will play when some of these players are away.
Yeah, and that is going to be, it's going to be guys like even defender-wise, it's going to be, you know, Hugo Arellano is a guy who could be coming in. You have Dave Romney who's coming in. Rafa Garcia could possibly play in defense, or he could play in the midfield. So there's a midfield guy for you. You know, are you going to get somebody like, you know, Raul Mendiola is going to be your immediate backup in the midfield? All these things are sort of things that you want to watch. These are the things that you can watch in a preseason game where not a lot of people will go, where it might be raining, and where the other team may or may not show up their entire starting lineup, or whether or not they're going to bring up some of their reserves and some of their bench guys and to give them a run out as well. I said, and I think some people got it sort of tongue-in-cheek, and I sort of said it somewhat tongue-in-cheek, is I remember going to a meaningless preseason game last year. It was a closed-door game between the Seattle Sounders and the LA Galaxy at StubHub Center, where it poured in buckets. I'm not talking a little bit of rain. The ball was floating on the StubHub Center pitch, and Seattle soundly... that was no pun intended. Seattle soundly took the LA Galaxy out. I think it was 4-0. It wasn't a game. It was a shellacking. And I walked away from that game, Kevin, saying, you know what? None of that matters. Except that now whenever I think back on it and you sort of look how everything played out, and I'm sure I'm drawing correlation between two things that have absolutely no relationship, is that, you know, maybe there was something out of this. So maybe we can take a little bit from these preseason games. But what we can take from it is going to be, you know, individual performances, whether good or bad, and sort of individual position choices, whether we agree with those or not. Right now, if you're going to tell me, you know, Sebastian Legette is going to start in the middle for the LA Galaxy, even with a somewhat degraded lineup, I'm expecting that Sebastian Legette will play out on the wing, even whenever, you know, even if that, if Jones isn't going to play, or if, you know, if, and Pedro's not there, you know, if Husidic is in the middle, then, you know, it might be Husidic and Jones with Legette outside, because I expect Legette is going to play that outside position right now. So those are sort of the things that I can kind of take away from this.
Well, let me, you know, I was thinking about formations last night and thinking about this team, and with Sebastian sort of proving himself as almost a number 10, as sort of a playmaking central midfielder, maybe being a little bit better at that position than Jermaine. And you know, I always think of Jermaine more as a defensive midfielder, just because he's such a rugged guy. He has such a rugged style of play. And maybe I'm completely wrong. I've seen him with the national team, where he and Michael Bradley seem to switch positions, you know, whenever they feel like it. But I was thinking about formations. What do you think of the Galaxy going with a 4-2-3-1 and the four back on the back line? We know the two, Jermaine and Pau Pedro, as the two holding midfielders. Then, you know, going across the midfield, you could have Ima Boateng and Sebastian in the middle, and then on the right side would be Gio, and then Giassi would be a target striker up front. I mean, I have no idea if Kurt would even think about that. Or rather, Alessandrini, not Ema, I'm sorry. Alessandrini on the left, Sebastian in the middle as the playmaker, and then Gio on the right, you know, maybe as almost a withdrawn striker, but Giassi up front by himself. I don't know if Kurt's thinking about that or not, but in terms of the Seattle game, I remember that game too. I was stunned that they even played the game. It was the worst conditions I ever saw.
Right.
But when you're talking about preseason games, you know, I don't think the Galaxy quit. I think they tried, but I don't think they tried as hard as Seattle. I think Seattle in that game, you're right. I mean, in retrospect, looking back after the season's over and Seattle's the champion, and they do it the hard way, coming, you know, out of the wild card game and coming from last place in the middle of the season and winning and never giving up, I look back at that game now and I said, you know, Seattle looked at that game and said, we have an opportunity to learn something from this game. These are difficult conditions against a very good team. We're really going to have to struggle just to literally stay afloat, no pun intended.
Yes.
And they won the game 4-0, and the Galaxy didn't reach down in that game like they did. And so I think Kurt is approaching this, and I think he's getting his players to approach this game the same way. Look, we don't have our number one team. Here comes Xolos. They lead Liga MX. They may have their best guys. We don't know. You're right. It could be a lot of guys with three-digit numbers like last year. We don't know that. We won't know until tomorrow. But, you know, I think Kurt's probably teaching his players, like, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for you, in the absence of Alessandrini, Ema Boateng, to show me that you are not my first guy off the bench, that maybe you should start over the French guy. Now, that's ridiculous because of what they're paying the designated player.
Right.
But that's the mindset he wants Ema Boateng to have going into this. I think Dave Romney looks at this and says, you know, Robbie Rogers, wow, this ankle bothered him last year. It's bothering him again. Maybe I'm the starter. I got to step up. Daniel Sturrus is definitely thinking that. Kurt told me that he had a long talk with Daniel during the offseason and said, look, you had a great season last year. It was your first year. Most players, young players, and you can look up the stats on this, they have a sophomore slump because they do so well the first year. They catch opponents by surprise. The opponents adjust.
Right.
And then it's up to the young player to readjust. And sometimes that doesn't happen quickly. So Kurt talked to Daniel Sturrus and said, look, you need to come into the season as if last year never happened. You need to be just as hungry as you were last year. And you can't rest on your laurels. You can't get overconfident. And it'd be interesting to see how Daniel Sturrus plays tomorrow. If Daniel Sturrus has a tough game and gets beat, I think Kurt's going to be barking at him again. If Daniel Sturrus has a good game, then I think that lesson got through, and that's going to be really important to the Galaxy.
Yeah, everything I've heard from Kurt Anolfo and from the players talking about Kurt Anolfo is that Kurt is not afraid to get on these players and to try and motivate them. And I think with a younger team, a youngish team, we'll say, that's going to be useful. And all of his time at LA Galaxy, too, could be very useful as well. It'll be interesting to see how that all goes down. Just a reminder, parking for this game, I believe they are charging for parking, and that it is a school night, so all of those Cal State Dominguez Hills parking lots will not be available. Not that I'm expecting a giant crowd for a preseason game in which it might rain. So bring your ponchos. No umbrellas allowed inside StubHub Center. Bring your ponchos if you're going to be there. Hopefully you can sit underneath the awning if they're allowing everybody to sit wherever they want. And we'll see everybody out there. 8 p.m. If you're missing this game, if you're not going to be able to make it, Spectrum Sportsnet will carry this game on TV live for you starting at 8 p.m. So that's something to keep an eye for. I want to hit some more mail that we got from Scott. And Scott says, and it's something that, Kevin, you and I have already discussed a couple times, is it says, he says, who will create chances for us this season? Landon did it for us in 2014 on the way to the Cup, but nobody really did it for us last year. And other than that 1 6-week stretch where Stevie G played the central attacking midfield role with a defensive midfield support behind him, I don't see a single player in this roster who can fill that role. Not Gio, because he's a withdrawn striker. Not Legette, he's a poor man's Jermaine Jones. Not Jones, he is a rich man's Sebastian Legette. Seems like one of the young kids needs to step up and create for Gio and Giassi. So who's going to create the chances?
You know, I think Sebastian does, and here's why. I think Sebastian was a little uncertain what his role was when he first came here, and last year too. You know, there were times he was a striker, there were times he was central midfield, then he was on the wing. He really wasn't sure what he was supposed to do. He got off to a great start when he joined the team in May of, what was that, 2015, and I think he scored so many goals early. I think he thought he was a goal scorer, and I don't know that ever was what his role was supposed to be. You know, I may be making too much of this time with the national team, but I really think it's reinvigorated him and given him a lot of confidence. Now I think he knows what his role might be. And if they start him in central midfield, I think he's going to look at that and say, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to create opportunities for other people. If they put him on the wing, he may get a little bit, he may get confused again. And Jermaine, if they use him in the holding midfield, obviously he's not going to create chances. But, you know, he did when he was playing as an attacking midfielder for Colorado last year. A lot of the offense, and it wasn't a whole lot of offense in Colorado, but the offense that they did generate came through him. So, you know, Stevie Gerrard, he did have some moments of brilliance last year as a guy creating chances. They are going to have to make up for that. I think Sebastian and or Jermaine can do that. One other guy that, you know, I think Gio does play up top, and I think Gio is a goal scorer, although he, you know, also led the team in assists last year. So
right,
he can do that too. I've talked to Gio a couple times this offseason, and I have to say he has really matured tremendously. Granted, he's a couple years older than he was when he first came here. And some of the veterans that maybe he was deferring to, I don't think Gio was going to come in and take the team away from Robbie Keane or even Steven Gerrard. But now I think Gio feels like the offense is in his hands. You know, he's a couple years older. You know, there's the possibility that his brother could join him. I think he's starting to take all of and I think he realized too, with everyone reminding him every 15 minutes, that he largely pissed away, you know, the first 6 or 8 years of his career,
right,
in Europe by not taking it seriously. I think he has a whole new seriousness for this now. He sees a World Cup coming with Mexico. He sees a great Mexican team with a chance to accomplish a lot. I think Gio is taking soccer a lot more seriously now than he ever did before. I think you're going to see a new motivated Gio dos Santos, a guy who's concentrating solely on soccer. That didn't really answer the question because I don't think he's going to create a ton of chances, but I think you're going to see Gio do a lot of remarkable things this year. That's my hope. And but yeah, I guess if I was going to answer the question, I think Gio does create some chances, but I think mainly Sebastian and Jermaine Jones. And I think Sebastian needs to find a place and Kurt needs to put him in a place where he's comfortable and confident and most importantly knows what's expected of him. That is the most important thing for an athlete. You talk to guys in a bullpen. Am I the closer? Am I the setup guy? Am I the middle relief guy? You got to tell me what you want me to do.
Right.
It's the same in soccer. Am I creating chances? Am I finishing chances? What am I supposed to, what do you want me to do in your offense?
Yeah, and I will add to that. I think, you know, Romain Alessandrini was brought in to create some chances as well with his speed and his, I think, some of his finishing ability as well. But realistically, with his speed on the outside, you're looking at guys who can feed the ball to guys like Giassi Zardes and Giovanni Dos Santos. And then, you know, again, another new signing, Joao Pedro. Yes, he's going to be more of a defensive midfielder. I've certainly seen from his highlights his ability to drop balls in where people can certainly run onto them, and whether or not those will create chances, that's something to see as well. And granted, we're not going to see those guys in this Jolos games, which is sort of disappointing, but you know, it's going to be more of a question mark as we get closer and closer to kickoff here. I want to get to one last email we got from John in Venice, and John says, hi guys, really been enjoying the show lately. He says, hypothetical trade proposal. I always love these. Hypothetical trade proposal. All right, Jermaine Jones to the Chicago Fire for Janino. Straight up, who says no and why? Kevin, and you, yeah, go ahead. Just attack this however you want.
Well, first of all, I think the idea is brilliant. And here's one thing I do think is missing from Major League Soccer. And correct me where I'm wrong, because,
yes,
you know, in other sports, like especially baseball, is that mid-season trade deadline begins to approach, there's so much energy and so much attention focused on, oh, our team needs a third baseman, these guys need a shortstop, this is a great trade. Whether it happens or not, fans talk about it for weeks. I just don't see that in the MLS. Yes, there have been some trades, the Dax McCarty trade, and there's been some other ones over the years. But for the most part, maybe there's one or two trades of note each year, and it certainly doesn't generate the talk, even the transfer window stuff does in Europe. And that would create a ton of excitement. It would be fun to talk about a trade like this and to actually think that, you know, the powers that be are thinking about it too. I think it would be a good trade. I think Janino wants, I know Janino wants to come back here. I think you, yes, and I talked about this. Janino actually contacted me just before Christmas and asked me what was going on in MLS and you know, what would be the possibility of him coming back. And he made it very clear that he wanted to come to MLS basically at all costs, but that if he had a choice, he'd want to come to the Galaxy. And I,
right,
thought at the time it was a good fit. excuse me. If I knew about it, the Galaxy knew about it, and they didn't make that signing. So I don't know if they, I don't know if they'd be interested in him now.
So apparently the Galaxy are the ones who would say no to that deal. Kevin is, by the way, just braving a cold that, like, I made him do this podcast. Yeah, and so he's somehow surviving in Tampa as we do this, and so that's what you're getting. He's not dying. All right, but
he's close. He's really close.
He's close. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. So, you know, I don't know that Chicago does the trade. The LA Galaxy seem to be taking, I imagine, Kevin, that at least I'm guessing that I think the salaries for those two players might be fairly comparable. I'm fairly certain that they used TAM to sign Juninho, and I could be wrong. This is off the top of my head. But anyway, the salaries could be comparable, so that's fine. You know, you don't ever see, by the way, Kevin, you don't ever get to see the magic, you know, player for a player trade in Major League Soccer very often. So you don't get like straight up trades, of any sort in Major League Soccer. So that would be interesting to see. I think Chicago might say no. I think the Galaxy are taking a little bit of a gamble with 35-year-old Jermaine Jones, who's coming off a major injury. Yes, the Galaxy think that he can be a great player, and they, I'm sure they love that U.S. men's national team tie-in. But for the most part, I don't know that Chicago would do that trade. I think that Chicago is very happy with that young core that they have, with Juninho being in there, who seems to be happy in Chicago right now, at least from all the Twitter stuff that he's doing. And, you know, Chicago's really looking to rebuild around Juninho and around some other pieces that they brought in. So perhaps, just perhaps, maybe the Chicago Fire would say no to that deal. In fact, that's where I would lean on this, is that Chicago says no to taking a chance on Jermaine Jones at 35 years old whenever they already have Juninho. It would be great for the LA Galaxy getting a younger Juninho back. But for me, Kevin, not necessarily one that I think that they're going to make, at least.
By the way, since you brought up Janino and salary both, if you buy the idea that Sebastian Legette is now your central midfielder and the guy who's going to be directing traffic and as the playmaker, then it does make sense to you know, because then Jermaine Jones, if you say that that's the way you're going to go forward, Sebastian Legette's younger, Jermaine Jones becomes expendable, Janino joins Pedro in that 4-2-3-1 that we talked about, and all that works. Again, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that probably isn't going to happen. But
right.
The other thing you brought up, salaries, just some updates on salaries. Nobody in MLS seems to talk on the record about definitive numbers. They will talk about numbers or you're close or whatever. So what we know that we're close to, we know that even with the DP signing that Van Damme is somewhere around 600,000. I would assume it's a little bit north of that, not as far north as 800,000. So between 6 and 8, much closer to 6 than 8. Jermaine Jones is in that range as well. So and he was signed with TAM money. We know that Alessandrini comes in at about 175. He's just under 2 million for his DP salary, and the transfer was about the same. So they spent $4 million to get him for 1 year. We don't know about Pedro. I'm assuming his salary is under, well, it's got to be under a million because he's not a DP, but his salary when the figures come out will look higher because the Galaxy, for whatever reason, have combined his salary with the transfer fee they had to pay for him. So it's going to look slightly elevated when you see what they actually spent for him. So those are where we are with some salaries. Payroll overall for this Galaxy team is going to be well south of $9 million. Last year it was $18.11 million, so they're less than half of the payroll that they had last year, you know, having gotten rid of $6 million with Gerard, $4.5 million with Robbie Keane. Now the only really high-priced DP is Dos Santos.
Right, yeah, and so that is sort of that, whether we say cost-cutting, Kevin, or whether we say, you know, spending wisely, perhaps, because I actually like a lot of the moves the LA Galaxy have made right now, and I'm not willing to just sort of concede that they're all cost-cutting, that they may have just been spending a lot more wisely with the money that they have, but you look at the salaries, and that's sort of where you set, and Kevin and I had talked about those before, and a lot of those make sense to me. Van Damme, again, I told you that the reason he's a designated player, and the only reason he's a designated player right now is to, in order to save TAM, targeted allocation money. Granted, he deserves to be a designated player. I don't want people to take that the wrong way, but it is to serve TAM, and if you go back and listen to my last podcast, Corner of the Galaxy, with Wendy Thomas, I explained that in depth, so go check that out on our website, cornerofthegalaxy.com. All right, go ahead.
You mentioned one last thing. You mentioned the cost-cutting thing, and I just have to bring this up. You know, I wrote cost-cutting maybe 3 times this offseason and got pushed back, got that pushed back at me by the Galaxy each time, and they were livid. They were actually very upset that I used the term cost-cutting. We're not cutting costs. We don't have a budget. We're not told what figures to pay. We don't have to get under a certain budget number. I mentioned that to a very high-profile agent, soccer agent, and he just burst into tears laughing so hard. He said, "What are you talking about? They got rid of $10 million in salary. They cut costs. Their coaching staff now, Kurt Onofo was not getting paid what Bruce Arena got paid. Their coaching staff now is four. Excuse me, again, there's 4 people instead of 5. You know, they've cut costs everywhere. And again, that's not pejorative. That it's just a fact. They are spending less to put this team on the field.
Yeah, it is. And that's one of those things. You have to understand where they came from last season. And then, of course, what they are going to spend this season as Kevin slowly dies. We'll make sure he's okay. But anyway, that's where we sit right now. I'm glad Kevin got the salary information in there. That's some good stuff here on the podcast that I think you hear here first. I don't think, Kevin, you've even written about that yet, have you?
Not yet.
Coming. It's coming. It's coming. So there you go. Little COG exclusive on Corner of the Galaxy from the box. And before we go, I just wanted to sort of give everybody the idea of what Corner of the Galaxy from the box is and why it's different from Corner of the Galaxy. Just real quick, because I get asked it all the time, and especially with Kevin joining the show, I think it only re-emphasizes the difference between the two shows. Whenever you get Corner of the Galaxy from the box, it's always meant from the press box. Granted, it plays on the penalty box as well, but you're looking at from the press box. And what Corner of the Galaxy from the box does is it takes the news guys. It takes guys like Kevin Baxter, like myself, who have been a credentialed member of the press for a while, and clearly not comparing myself to Mr. Baxter over here covering so many events over the years, World Cups and everything else in between. You know, you're getting the information in terms of news, and any sort of speculation that comes from Kevin or I is speculation based on what we have learned, you know, covering the team over the years, and maybe any information that we have. And so this is the news center of Corner of the Galaxy here. And then we do our live show, Corner of the Galaxy, which, of course, you have Wendy Thomas on, Jared Dubois on occasion, Corey Ritzow, all of those co-hosts. And that's more of our fun show where we get to have a little bit more fun, although, Kevin, I certainly always have a great time recording with you. But, you know, it's a little more fun. It's a little more speculative. It's a little more fan-based. All right? And that's where we really want to get your input on it. And granted, we got some great emails, and I want to continue those. So please send in your emails if you have questions for myself or Kevin, and we'd be happy to answer them throughout the season as we go, and I'll continue to ask. But that's the difference between the two shows, is that Corner of the Galaxy from the Box is going to be sort of news-centered around what we know and what is happening with the LA Galaxy. And we're trying our very best, Kevin especially, to bring you all the information that is behind the scenes that maybe hasn't been available before. So that's our goal. I'm glad that maybe we can do that for you this season. And I know Kevin's going to work real hard on it, and I'm going to work real hard on it as well to make sure that we continue this show sort of in that vein. And so that's our mission statement with Corner of the Galaxy from the Box, is to bring you the best news. That's what we're going to try to do. And we're going to have some fun while we do it as well. And hopefully you're going to learn some stuff that you haven't heard before, like some of those salary stuff that that Kevin just broke for you. All right. All right, Kevin, anything else? You good? We're all set for the exhibition game versus the Xolos coming up on Tuesday night. You ready for that?
I will be at a hockey game tomorrow night, but you guys enjoy yourselves, and I will check in during the hockey game, find out how, provided I'm still alive with this cold. And you guys enjoy yourself out there. We'll be doing some hockey. It's kind of the same thing. It's you try to put an object into a net, and you get a point when you do.
Right.
And the team is owned by AEG, so there you go. It's the same sport, the same ownership. It couldn't be more similar.
I was going to say the synergies run throughout. I'm excited about that. All right, Kevin, we'll have a safe trip back, a safe travel with the Kings there, and whenever you get back, we'll continue our podcast. All right, if you're looking for Kevin Baxter, it's at KBaxter11. KBaxter11 on Twitter, and that's where you can find him. Of course, he writes for the LA Times. Go to latimes.com for all of Kevin's news writings, all the stuff he does covering the LA Galaxy as well. All right, for me, at Jay Guessman, JGUESMAN, and of course at Galaxy Podcast. And if you want to email the show at cornerofthegalaxy@gmail.com. That's where you can find us. All right, first preseason game coming up Tuesday night. I'll be there. Looking forward to seeing all of you there. Hopefully it doesn't rain on us. I don't like getting wet any more than anybody else does, but be there regardless. Should maybe possibly learn some stuff about the LA Galaxy, or maybe we'll learn absolutely nothing. It'll be interesting to find out. Thanks for joining us here on Corner of the Galaxy from the Box. We will be back next week. Everyone have a safe week, safe travels. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy from the Box podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everybody.